1 o'clock. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and not the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Oh, shame.
She's not here.
She's not well.
Yeah. Hold on a second. I can't hear you very well. Somebody's been messing with me dials.
Oh, dear.
That's better.
I can hear me now.
Yeah. Somebody had turned the dials down.
Oh, well, they probably knew it was going to be me that was going to be on the mic.
That could be true.
Yeah, probably just sort of forearm, turn him down. He's allowed so-and-so.
Yeah. So so what we've done, yeah, poor Jules is getting her vax damage sorted out again.
Poor thing.
So we've got two fantastic guests in the studio that we're going to be talking to. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking to Mark Beattie of Off-Broadway Travel. But welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you very much. Thanks okay.
Sorry, in the first part of the show, you're quite right. He stuck his finger up at me and I suddenly realised what he meant.
Yeah.
Of course you're in the first part of the show. And then we're also joined by Simon Webster, late of this parish. From the Money Talk Show.
From the Money Talk Show. Refugee. Yeah,
absolutely. So Simon's on in the second part of the show officially, but of course he's being Jules for most of the show as well.
I look really good in the wig.
Do you?
Yeah, well, I think so.
I have heard that.
Yeah.
I saw the Facebook page about it.
Yeah, it's yeah. a special announcement that we had on that.
Nice one. So, gentlemen, thanks for joining us on the show. It's a pleasure to see you. I want to say a huge thank you to this week's show sponsor, who are the lovely folks at ZC Social Media. And they're running a series of free social media masterclasses starting on January the 21st. It's Social Media Success Masterclass.
All right.
Yep. So do find out about that. You can. There's a... it's on their website, but they've got a Facebook page where you can sign up for it. So if you go and find ZC Social Media on Facebook or Social Media Success Masterclass on Facebook, you can find out all about it. And Zoe Cairns, who's the driving force behind ZC Social Media,
hence the initials.
Absolutely,
it's amazing, that, isn't it?
It's clever.
See
that,
what
isn't
you
it?
Did there? Yeah,
yeah, it's really clever. Yeah. Anyway, she gave me a really nice content planning guide, which I was filling out yesterday. Really useful.
Good. Can you email me a copy of that then, please?
Well, it's difficult.
All right.
Because it's a physical book.
It's a physical book?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Might have a bit of a challenge then.
I could try and ram it into my hub.
I suppose it depends on the width of your broadband.
Yeah, yeah.
How wide's your bandwidth?
Yeah.
Can I get a book down there?
I need to tell you this. I've been causing a stir on Twitter over the last week about various people that have been annoying me.
It's a long list, I hear.
It is quite a long list. And I started with Hermes, the delivery people.
That's Hermes?
Yeah.
Hermes. All
yeah,
right.
Hermes, the delivery people. Yeah. And I had problems, as you always do with Hermes, if anybody's ever had a delivery from there. Terrible. Anyway, I posted this post saying this is ridiculous. I had a notification that they delivered a parcel, which they hadn't delivered.
Oh, dear.
And in the tracking thing, it's here's the photo of where we put it, completely black. And then there's a map. This is approximately the postcode, and it was like 4 miles from where I live.
Oh, joy.
Yeah. And, of course, as normal with Hermes, they actually delivered the parcel 2 days later because they hadn't actually delivered it.
Oh.
Anyway, I posted this on Twitter to Hermes, and Hermes replied once, which was a big mistake for them. They have been inundated all week with people putting up, this happened to me, this was the state. And at the end of the day, you'd think that the management of Hermes would go, we're getting killed here. again for all the same things that we get killed for every time. And you'd think they'd start to address it, wouldn't you?
You would.
But they don't. Anyway, so flushed with the success of embarrassing them, BT had what I thought was a promoted tweet this morning talking about cryptocurrencies. And it, yeah, exactly.
They're nice there.
Yeah, yeah. So it's BT. We've got a blog to help you resolve any issues you have with Bitcoin and blockchain and cryptocurrencies. So I just tweeted, well, that's great, but how about fixing my broadband? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And they replied and they went, oh, and what's wrong? I went, well, actually nothing. It just doesn't work very well. Have you reported it? Well, there's not much point because it is what it is. What I'm saying to you is, rather than mess about with blogs about cryptocurrency, why don't you work on upping your game?
In your core business area.
In your core business, which is broadband, especially as in 3 years' time, you're going to switch off the Switch network and go totally voice over IP. You might want to think about making your broadband work first. And I came back and went, sorry.
Yeah, well, it's about all you can expect, really. Defending the indefensible. Yeah. I had one at the office literally this morning. Mm. We used some software, which will remain nameless because I might get sued. But what I'm about to say is true. And we used this software to research stuff. If I say what stuff we research, it narrows it down a bit too much. And in order to make it work, the support desk at this well-known software company were telling us that we had to clear our cookie cache, which will mean something to the IT people out there, in order to make it work. And so we now have an international software company that's written code that requires us to delete their cookies in order for the software to work for first time up. Yeah. And this has been going on since October.
Wow.
And I actually posted something on their internal intranet saying, do you really want to be known as a software company who has to have all this done to make it work?
Cookies are interesting, isn't it? I had somebody complain at me the other day. They said, I'm reporting you. Why is that? And I said, I went into your website and it doesn't give you a cookie disclaimer. Ah, really? And they said, yep, it's the law. You have to have that. No, it isn't. And they said, yes, it is, and we're reporting you to the Information Commissioner. I said, far away, report me away. I said, but you need to ask one basic question. And they went, what's that? I said, we don't put cookies on. And they went, oh.
That actually is quite an interesting one, because I'm not sure there are cookies on our website, mm-hmm. and there is a cookie disclaimer on there because somebody told me we needed to have
it. But
I don't actually, if you don't have cookies, I don't think you need it.
No, you don't.
I'll have to check that out.
I think we have a cookie disclaimer on our website and we don't collect any cookies or any information from anybody that visits
our website. So you don't need it. If you don't collect it, you don't need it.
Well, there you are. I'll tell you what, listening to Business Bunker, dear listener, has been absolutely worthwhile today if it actually saves us all having to click unnecessarily on websites.
Well, that's my point. You know, the point about, you know, your unnamed software company and everybody else is it's a faff, isn't it? Every time you go into a website, you have to go, oh, allow, or if you don't really want, you know, you have to sit there for hours going through all the things you want and don't want. For me, I just ask, for the vast majority of businesses, especially small businesses, do you really need to have cookies? Do you really need to collect it? Do you do anything with them? Is it of any use to you at all? Well, why batter your clients with, you know, silly pop-ups? I saw a thing on social media a couple of days ago. Someone just did a satire of going into a media website, and the media ones are the worst, especially in newspapers. You click on a link to a story, you accept the cookies, yeah? You then dismiss the pop-up. You then swipe left to get rid of the sign-up for their email, you know. And by the time you've done that, you forgot what you were clicking to look at anyway.
And you lost the will to live. And the bit that really surprises me in all of this is that, as I understand it, and you may know differently, Paul, this cookie disclaimer rubbish is EU law.
Yes.
We are no longer EU members.
So
we no longer need to do it. And actually, I reckon if you had a national vote of the, 40 million over 18s there are in the UK, 39,750,000 will say, get rid, we don't need it. Mm-hmm. And it would be an instant win to say, we got Brexit, and there's an immediate bit. We save some of your life.
Yeah. It's I can't remember what they called it. It was Section 11 or something. It was called Section 11 and Section 12. The EU were trying to implement a policy where you couldn't post anything without the owner's permission.
Mm.
Yeah, as well, which is insanity because every newspaper would just go bust because you could, you know, newspapers post stories. If they needed permission of everybody that was in the story before they could post it, you'd just never post anything.
Exactly.
And that was a very serious... I can't remember what I called it. It was definitely 11, but I can't remember what I called it beforehand. Section 11 or something like that, yeah. Anyway. Or Directive 11 or something. And there was two, 11 and 12. And one was about cookies and GDPR, and the other one was going further and saying you basically couldn't do anything to anybody. That's why, if you look, something like, the last time I saw this, 900,000 US websites now block the EU.
Oh, wow.
Europe, yeah, not just the EU, the institution, but block doing anything in Europe. If you try to click a link in any of their things, it says you can't view this because you're in Europe, so go away.
There's an awful lot of that. You can't. Yeah. This content is not available in your jurisdiction.
Yeah.
I actually got that message from the BBC website the other day. I can't remember what it was. It was something really innocuous.
Yeah. Yeah.
This content is not available in your jurisdiction.
Yeah.
We had a little win while we're on the subject of IT. This may be useful for listeners. We have had problems with online banking at home and on the office for at least 2 years. Every time we try and make a payment, we get kicked out. It bounces around. You get kicked out. My wife, who does all this stuff for us, drives us nuts. One day, we phoned up the help desk at a well-known international bank where we bank and said, this is a problem. And they just keep saying, your IP address keeps changing, so it kicks you out. So I invested in a VPN. Cost me £2 a month. And now, my IP address is rock solid, and all the payments go through, and it's literally changed my wife's life.
Yeah.
So if you are one of the several thousand people, I reckon, out there who have problems making online payments, all you need to do is sign up for a VPN.
Get a fixed IP address.
Or get a fixed IP address from your internet service provider, which is another possibility.
Yeah.
Our internet is actually over 4G because we're in a little village. And
that's why it changes.
Yeah, nothing exists.
Yeah, because if you've got a fixed broadband from BT or whatever, it's a fixed IP.
Yeah.
Because I have the alternative problem. With a fixed IP, I get trouble with different things. It won't let me do stuff.
Oh, well.
But you're absolutely right. Don't get me started on banking.
No, I won't.
Because I would not like to mention HSBC ever again.
I don't think there's a lot of people want to talk about HSBC, really.
Yeah. I had 18 months of hell with them. They're just idiots. They're just idiots. There's no other way of describing it. They had a thing on there which was safeguarding. And you had to provide data, which they already had, but you had to re-provide the data. I've had an account for 14 years.
Yeah. We were talking about this the last time I was
exactly.
on the show.
Yeah.
I remember it's still rumbling on.
Well, kind of yes and no.
All right.
So very briefly, they asked for some data. I submitted it eventually 8 times, and they kept writing to me saying, you haven't done this. And I eventually spoke to someone there, and I emailed them the data rather than put it in on the online system. They emailed me back and said, yes, we confirm we have got it, and it's all done, okay?
Mm.
They then, about a month later, wrote to me and said, you haven't provided this, we're going to suspend your account. At which point, I lost my temper, and I just closed my account and moved it, yeah? Last week, I got a letter from them saying, if you don't provide this data, we are definitely going to shut your account.
And you'd already take it away.
Yeah, and I went, which account's that then? And they went, you don't seem to have an account. I went, no, I haven't, because I closed it. Now go away. Unbelievable.
And the word idiot is absolutely appropriate.
I think so. I don't think I was being unfair there.
No.
Anyway, enough of all of that.
That's a 15-minute introduction of rambles.
Well, that kind of wasted 15 minutes, really, didn't it?
Well, it did. Yeah. Are we going to do some emails?
Yes, you can. Why don't you read one?
This one says, new Omicron business grant scheme available in Maidstone.
Okay.
Hospitality, leisure and accommodation businesses are being contacted by Maidstone Borough Council to check if they are eligible for the new Omicron one-off government business grant.
Wow.
I got one of those very early on, and very handy it was too.
Hmm.
The council has acted quickly to make sure all eligible businesses can claim the new grant up to £6,000 and is emailing eligible businesses to invite them to make a claim. So if you're in that area, for further information about the new Omicron Hospitality and Leisure Grant, visit maidstone.gov.uk and search for business grants, or click a very long link, which I'm not going to bore you with now. So it's really worth having a go. And it does say here, any business that does not meet the eligibility criteria for this grant and is experiencing difficulty as a result of the pandemic should contact the Maidstone Business Boost team, MBB at maidstone.gov.uk, to find out what other support, including grants, may be available. So it's fantastic. Worth having a look at.
Yeah, get in there. I've got a tweet while Simon's shuffling his papers. I've got a tweet from Michael Park Surveyors, the commercial property specialist over there in Medway. They said, we're looking forward to tuning into the Business Bunker radio show today with Vanilla Webb. Such a great lineup of guests.
Hey, you're great. They never say that when I'm on. It must be about you. Well
yeah,
done.
Well,
good
Mark,
for you.
There
good
you go. Yeah. Paragon Drones, we would love a mention on the show. Pension and Travel sounds like a great show, and we shall be listening in.
Well, I'll have to say something about pensions later then.
Yeah, I think it's probably worthwhile. Yeah. You might want to Google it before you do.
Make sure I get it right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just so we're clear, I was right. We'll come on to tax deadlines later.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. You can avoid a fine if you file after the 31st of January.
Right.
But you're still liable for interest on unpaid tax if you pay it late. So,
oh, really?
Yes, the 31st of January is technically the deadline. You just get a slight extension.
That's a really good point, though, because they made it sound as if they'd extended the deadline to the end of February.
Well, they have sort of, because it's a deadline to not get a £100 fine. But it's not freedom from interest on the tax bill that you should have paid by the 31st of January.
Okay, all right. Well,
there you go. Shall I read another one here?
Yeah, go for it.
A string of co-op stores across the country are set to sell cut-price products past their best-before date. It is part of the chain's waste reduction scheme, which aims to keep as much produce as possible in the food chain and cut down the amount going to waste. It means convenience stores in Ashford, round here, Lenham, Minster, Seasalter and Whitstable will be selling the out-of-date products where it relates to quality and not the safety of the goods, and the prices will be slashed to just 20p. So get down there quick, boys.
Oh, there you go.
And girls.
That's quite a good thing, isn't it?
It is indeed. Yeah. We're slaves to sell by dates, aren't we, really?
Absolutely. I mean,
it's,
I don't mean anything.
Absolutely ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear about I think it's Aldi that are taking the sell by dates off of milk altogether?
Yes, yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
It's a great point. Actually, yeah. Does it pass the sniff test?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
I was about to say, I mean, I smell milk. I don't know what it's supposed to smell like, whether it's good or bad, but as long as it tastes right, my cereal, then I'm not really going to quibble.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I'm a great, you know, I was making myself some lunch the other day, and a man said, "You're not going to eat that, are you?" And I said, "Why?" And she said, "You said the sell by date on this tin." And I went, "No, what is it?" She said, "It's 2017.
Oh, my.
I went, "Well, it looks okay to me." It was in a tin, it's soup.
And it was all right.
Of course it was.
We had a cupboard clear out at home just before Christmas, as you do.
Mm.
And we found items going back to 2015.
Mm.
2015, yeah, in the back of a cupboard. And that means it moved house with us 7 years ago and was out of date then. That was a scary bit. Yeah. I mean, oh, my goodness me.
Did you see they found a pot of honey in Pompeii?
Yes, I think I did.
Yeah, it's a pot of honey in Pompeii, and they cleared the kind of ash off the top of it and dipped their finger in, and they said it was perfectly edible, and it was 2,000-year-old honey. Honey is one of the only food groups that just never it just doesn't go off.
Well, it's totally natural.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Urgent call for landlords with one-bed flats or studios. We got time for that?
Yeah, go for it.
Maidstone Borough Council have been busy today with us.
They have. They like us, Maidstone Council. They send us a lot of press releases.
So there is somebody that likes you. That's really good.
Not many, but...
yeah. Maidstone Borough Council urgently looking for landlords with self-contained one-bed flats or studios to house residents in need across the borough. The Housing First scheme provides full dedicated support to the landlord throughout the whole life of the tenancy, as well as a £2,000 one-off incentive payment Simon. I wasn't very interested in this until I read that. £2,000 one-off incentive payment. The council will also pay 6 weeks' rent in advance, along with a 12-month extensive insurance policy covering both landlord and tenant. That actually sounds like a win, because it's probably about the only way you could persuade people to do it, but it might help solve the housing crisis. The tenancy will be fixed for 12 months, and we will work with you to make sure the property is suitable and affordable for the tenant prior to any letting. We can also request that the rent is paid directly to the landlord or agent. There's a whole spiel about how Maidstone is committed to the small tenant market, but definitely worth looking at. You can call 01622 602252 or email homefinders@maidstone.gov.uk for further information.
Fantastic, thank you. I'm going to do one more tweet and then we're going to play some cheesy tunage. And this is from Martin Reeves, who on Twitter is known as Collector's Buddy, Collectors_Buddy. He says, could I have a shout out on the Business Bunker, please? Because you're bringing some sunshine to a very frosty Ashford and Kent.
It is a bit miz outside, isn't it?
It is miserable, yeah. Amanda tweeted me from work with a picture which was just grey. It was fog, and you couldn't see it. She works at Leeds Castle, and she just took a picture of the castle, except you can't see the castle because of the fog.
It's terrible. We sometimes go down Stone Street between Canterbury and Postling, which is where we live, which is sort of towards the M20, and you drive out of the Canterbury environs about 6 miles, and then you just walk into a wall of fog, literally. It's a dunk fog, thick as anything.
Athelbray Limited have been on. Happy Business Bunker Day. We'd love a shout out, please. Vanilla Webb, that's me. Anyone looking for training or coaching in 2022, give us a call on 01892. I do believe that's Paddock Wood. 01892 832 059. And we're happy to talk through options within your budget. We'll catch up later as we have an appointment this afternoon with the Ducks.
Wow.
And their grandson, Connor.
Oh, well, there you go. Ducks and grandsons are very important. Family first, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, we'll do some more tweets and emails later, but I'll tell you what, let's have some cheesy tunage in honour of our guest here, Mr. Beattie. It's Quo.
I was going to say, it sounds like Status Quo. Yes. I saw them live last year.
Yeah, brilliant. It's The Wanderer, Status Quo.
I'm a wonder. Locke Associates Group. Let us look after all your people needs so you can focus on growing your business. No long-term tie-ins, just responsive, commercially-minded support. Find us at lochassociates.co.uk.
Talis Independent Financial Advisors can help you invest, organise your pensions, and even get you the best possible life insurance, mortgage, or equity release deal. Check out talisifa.com. Grow your business with Kent's Best Business Events. Visit bestbusinessevents.co.uk.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with Workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
This is Channel 2.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. That was the Wanderer, Status Quo.
Yay.
We had Simon bopping away there. He nearly ran home to get his double denim out.
Yeah, and one of my guitars. That would have been great fun.
Yeah. What guitars? You got? Was it a Gibson you had or?
I have a small collection. So I've got a Gibson ES335, which is my latest toy.
Right.
I've got a PRS Top 24 Custom Deluxe. Right. I've got a Fender Strat. I've got an Ovation Adamus, which is my acoustic, and a Fender Jazz Bass, which fantastic. I can barely play.
I was going to say, are you going to have lessons at any time, or you just look at them?
Have you heard me play, Paul?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
Sadly, you haven't heard me play, but you are right. I do need lessons. I need them so badly. I need good lessons because I play so badly, but there you go.
Oh, dear. But you got the right gear for it. You can't blame your tools.
No, definitely can't blame my tools. It's really quite nice, actually, because the guitars I've bought over the years have held their value.
Yep.
So if you've actually got cash in the bank, you're getting no interest on it. I've got cash on my wall because I hang all my guitars on the wall, and they're not depreciating in value. And in some cases, they're going up.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a win.
Yeah. And that's what he tells the missus anyway. When he buys his next Stratocaster.
He needs a new one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I want a Telecaster next. I haven't got a Telecaster.
Okay.
I'm going to get a picture out now. It's really good for the radio.
Anyway, that was The Wanderer, which I thought I'd pay in tribute to our first guest. And it's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show for the very first time, Mr. Mark Beattie of Off Broadway Travel.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure, Mark, and it's very apposite, and one of the reasons we invited you along, as well as the fact we want to hear all about you and stuff like that, is, of course, people are hoping to travel at some time this year.
Oh, yes, please, definitely.
Yeah. But first off, if you kick us off, Mark, by just giving us an overview of the company itself, give us a bit of background to the company and then what you're up to, and then we'll talk about the industry in general.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So feel free to interject if you've got any questions, but essentially Off-Broadway Travel, so we're 24 years in existence now. It's an independent family-owned business. Actually, we opened up in North London, and our main office is up in Hertfordshire in Welling.
Right.
Partly one of the reasons how I met you, Paul, actually, and the reason I'm on the show is that the exciting news is that we've just opened up an office in Tenterden.
Absolutely.
Which
yeah.
is good. We're getting there in terms of furnishing it, so that's quite nice. We're an award-winning travel agent, so I won't bore you to too much information, but we are quite lucky. We're independent. We've won quite a few awards, but some of the sort of the standout ones for us. Back in 2017, we won we actually won two awards, but the main was we was voted UK and Ireland's number one travel agency by the Travel Trade Gazette, which is essentially the travel industry's media house, if
yeah,
you like.
Absolutely.
That's a hell of an achievement.
That was
That's
one
a
hell of
really
an
big deal.
So essentially it's there's lots of different awards on the night, and everybody's a winner within their categories, and then out of the winners in the categories it goes into sort of win the overall award. So we were the London and South East travel agency, and then also was opted Yeah, UK and Ireland's number one travel agency.
Oh, yeah. That is a real achievement.
Yeah. Mm. So,
so why do you think you won that? I mean, that's a hell of a thing. Well, why?
It is a hell of an achievement, actually. Yeah, and I think it's one of those things. We've had a couple of conversations. It's a lot to do with our service, a lot to do with the fact that we treat all of our clients as a person and as a name, as opposed to just a number. Mm. We're kind of in that. We are, you know, a small business, but we're sort of on the cusp of. We've got enough clients to sort of, you know, make a living out of, essentially, but actually that we're still small enough that we recognise every client when they call up. We know them by name. We know them when they walk in through the door. You know, we know their family, etc.
I don't want to detract the conversation too far from this, but I think that's an incredibly important point. And it's one of my big bugbears with big corporates these days. They lose the plot as far as their customers are concerned. They clearly don't care. You know, if you've got a million customers, one upset customer, who cares?
Yeah.
But that's the problem. Eventually your systems don't match the requirements of any of your customers because you've not responded to what a customer wants. Now, you know, we all know, we've all been in business a long time, and we all know that there are some customers that are just a pain in the bum, and, you know, you just wish they weren't there, really.
Yeah, you can't please everybody.
Yeah, because you can't please everybody all the time. But by the same token, people want to feel recognized. I'm giving you my business, or valued. I'm trying to give you my business. That's the word I was looking for. You're right, Simon. They want to feel valued by someone that's selling them something.
Yep.
And I think, you know, with a small business like yours, or a medium-sized business like yours, you can still do that. The problem for all of us in business is, as we grow, whether we lose that connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing. I think a lot of our clients like the fact that one thing actually that I always say, and it's an accolade in itself, I think, is if we call up a client and they answer by saying hello Mark, or you know, hello any of my colleagues, I think that's a win, because there's
a relationship.
We're stored in their phone, or they know the number, and I think straight away there's a relationship there.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a huge difference.
And again, it's interesting because this is what you're doing. You're opening a local office here. I think that is what extends a bigger company back into its roots, is by having local businesses, local offices that know their local client base. And again, this is the mistake that I see big corporates making, who are going the other way. They close all their local offices and put everything in a call centre in Glasgow.
In a shed miles away from anywhere where nobody can reach them.
Exactly.
You can't find anybody to talk to.
Exactly.
We have this, I mean, we're financial advisors, and we have this when we're talking. I had to speak to four different people in four different locations not to get an answer to a straightforward question from quite a large insurance company. I mean, a very large insurance company. I just got bounced around the place. Yeah. And I vaguely know what I'm doing, and I've been doing it 40 years. I ought to. And I just couldn't get to a person that had access to the right screen to give me the right information. And I just wanted to reach down the phone and strangle somebody.
Yeah.
So Joe Public, who's trying to deal with financial companies or tourist companies or internet companies or whatever, having somebody that actually knows who they are, understands their situation and can deal with their stuff, it's such a huge time saving and frustration saving. I think people are starting to really appreciate that again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing. I think that's a large part of why you won the award, apart from being good at what you do. You're absolutely right. It's part of being good at what you do.
Absolutely.
It's about offering a personal service where you value your customers and give them some good advice and support. And you're absolutely right, Simon. We moved far too far away from caring about customers and got more into caring about processes. Mm. And you see that. I'm not going to get into a rant because I want to talk to Mark, but I've been in and out of the NHS with my old mum over the last few months. And the NHS, I used to be a management consultant. And 20 years ago, I did a management consultancy assignment for two NHS trusts. And they're still making the same mistakes today that they were making 20 years ago. Mm. They are focused on their processes and not their patients, and certainly not on their patients' relatives. And that's what makes them not function properly.
Mm.
But anyway, let's come back to the travel business and Off-Broadway travel, because that's what we're trying to talk about here. So congratulations on your awards. And I know that after 2017, you still went on winning awards, did you not?
Recently, actually, we've been shortlisted again for the TTG Luxury travel agency of the year, the store. So you've got like home workers, and then you've got the actual physical store. So yeah, right. So we've been shortlisted for that one as well, which is nice. But yeah, throughout the years, we do. It's an amalgamation of slightly what I would call sort of like the larger awards from the media houses, etc. But also the operators that we deal with have more specialised awards with the travel agencies that they deal with.
Absolutely.
But it's nice to say that we are quite, you know, widely regarded in the industry.
Absolutely.
Which is I think is nice.
Now, I'm guessing the last couple of years for you have been a bit like the last couple of years for most of the rest of us. A bit challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. But interestingly, just coming back on the point of relationships, I think over the last 2 years, there's been nothing more important than having that personal relationship and having that face to a name and knowing that somebody's got your back. Yeah. Certainly, as you said, Paul, the last 2 years has been a little bit turbulent for us. Thankfully, we're still here. We're still
masterful understatement. Yeah, a little bit turbulent for us. Yeah.
We're still here to live the tale, and certainly we've done a hell of a lot better than others.
But again, and you don't have to come on this, if you know, I right back when, it seems like a century ago when all of this started, I'd booked a holiday 6 months before the lockdowns happened, but just as we were approaching when we were due to go is when the lockdown started to happen. And the airline, and I'd done it all online. I hadn't used a travel agent. I typical stuff, booked it online, booked this, booked that, did it miles in advance. The airline contacted me and said, "We're not flying there." Right, well, you better return my money. Now, hold on a minute. You've cancelled me. Yeah, I haven't cancelled you. You've cancelled me. You better return my money. I won't bore you with the details because they did return my money, except they returned it to a credit card that I no longer had.
Oh, joy.
That's helpful.
Because I booked it 6 months before on a credit card that got hacked and I tore up. But they actually refunded it and the credit card company accepted the refund and then lost the money. Anyway, different... Different story.
Was that HSBC as well?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, but it's another quite, bank. It
could,
like
have, it could quite have been. Yeah. But again, you know, one of the rationales for working with an organisation like you, when those kind of things happen, you've got someone to talk to. Yeah. You know, Simon's point about being sent round the houses by corporate help desks is never more true than in those circumstances.
Absolutely.
When you're trying to cancel something or they've cancelled you and you're trying to get your money back or find out what's happening and all the rest of it. I had a really funny one. A mate of mine at the same time had booked a holiday to Spain. Okay. And he was worried. I told him my story, and he went, "Oh, they're going to cancel that. Do you know, I'm going to go somewhere else." And I can't remember. I think it was Austria, based on where we are now. Yeah. But then Austria was open. So he booked a flight to Austria. But he hadn't cancelled the first one, and he booked it on the same day that he was supposed to be flying with Spain, with the same airline. So he's going two places at the same time. Yeah.
Trying to disguise his identity.
And then eventually... The airline cancelled his thing to Spain, and they said to him, "Right, but you can book to go somewhere else." And he said, "Well, I've already booked to go somewhere else." And they went, "Oh, with you?" And "Oh, right. Well, we'll give you your money back then." So he went, "Fine." And they gave him both lots of money back.
Oh, really? That's handy.
That's a win.
Yeah.
I know a lot of clients that have gone the other way. Still fighting for their money now.
It's not good, is it? And again, you know, so...
And that's actually illegal, isn't it? Because the government actually... Didn't the government pass some legislation? Actually, legislation that travel companies had to refund and refund quickly. So these companies that aren't doing it are actually breaking the law.
There was so the legislation at the time was because just purely for cash flow, there was a lot of travel companies that just quite simply didn't have the cash flow to be able to refund all the clients. So there was legislation to say that ATOL protection, if you buy an ATOL protected package, was also protecting credit notes. So it allowed travel companies to give credit notes, but there was a time limit on them. So after, I think it was 3 or 6 months, if you then didn't want to rebook with that credit note and travel somewhere, you could then request a full refund. And then by law, they have to give you the refund. It's
just
what they were doing was staggering out.
Easy cash flow. Which makes some kind of sense as well.
I understand that.
Joined up thinking from government. Wow. Well, that's a bit of joined up thinking. You've got to give credit where it's due.
Yeah, true. I mean, funnily enough, at the start of the pandemic, the government were very quick to do some very clever things.
Yes, they were.
you know, and you shouldn't overlook that. The fact that they've been a bit twat since then is not here nor there. But
party.
Yeah. But, you know, anyway, let's get back to the Trump business because otherwise I could go down.
Paul and I on politics could be quite a show. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I saw your face. So let's move on talking about. So, you know, we all kind of suffered one degree or another during the last couple of years. We're kind of hopefully opening up a bit in some places, although the French seem to be determined to go the other way.
I thought the French had eased recently.
They imposed massive restrictions last night. Now, unvaccinated people are not allowed to travel on any transport in France and not allowed to visit any restaurant or shop of any kind. And you can't just produce a negative test. You have to be vaccinated. Otherwise, you can't do anything. And they've also announced that any football matches, so Chelsea, for instance, my team are due to play Lille in the Champions League. Any players or staff that aren't vaccinated can't go.
All right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting under UEFA rules to find out because you can't do that. So, if to my mind,
well, UEFA doesn't have the power to overrule national governments. No, even if it would like to, it still can't.
No, but what it can do is make you play the game in a neutral country.
All right, fair enough. Well, that's a fair one.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I would do. I'd say, well, fine, you can't play in Lille, then you'll have to play in Kazakhstan.
Yes, send them somewhere obscure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
we need a travel agent to organise that. I wonder if we know anybody.
Well, exactly. Yeah, but this is you know, this is my point really. That as a travel agent, it must be hell at the moment trying to keep up with all the different moves and regulations and who can go where for what under what circumstances.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, essentially, we say this to all of our clients and generally anybody we're speaking to. So every single time we do an inquiry, and in fact, every time we make an amendment to an inquiry, or even every time we touch a booking, if it's an actual existing booking, we're always checking any new changes to the rules of entry or coming back, etc. I have to say, actually, on the whole, it's fairly good news for us at the moment in terms of the UK has dropped all of their restrictions virtually in terms of the biggest stumbling block for us over the last couple of months was the pre-departure test before you came home from anywhere.
Yeah.
That was a big one because clients were really worried about doing the test, testing positive, and then having to isolate for the 7 or 10 days.
That happened to me in 2020.
Of course it did.
Yeah, I was visiting my son in the south of France, in the southwest France, and we drove, and we were due to come back on the Saturday. So it's a 10-hour drive, and then a crossing on the shuttle.
Yep.
Yeah. 11 a.m. the night, 11 p.m. the night before, I get a text message from the UK government. As of 4 a.m., anyone crossing back into the UK has to quarantine for 10 days when they get back, unless you can get there by 4 a.m. Well, I must have got 30 speeding tickets from cameras trying to get back to Calais in time to cross. And I just missed the 4 a.m. crossing and got the 5 a.m. crossing, and we had to quarantine for 10 days.
Oh, that was a pain.
We've had so many clients that have had, over the last few months, we've had so many clients. South Africa was a big one for us just before Christmas.
Yeah.
We had, when they changed the rules, we had one or two clients out there, but we also had a few clients who were waiting to go. Luckily, the restrictions weren't imposed for too long, but the client that was out there, it was mad panic. Suddenly, right. All of a sudden, you've got to change, book a flight at an extra cost and get yourself home whichever way you can just to avoid the isolation. And thankfully, we managed to get her home.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. That's what was putting people off. It's the uncertainty of when you're out.
Moving goalposts when you're away. Exactly. You plan on one basis.
And you can't expect to travel with that.
I have some family members, I'll leave it vague, who were coming to the UK from South Africa, actually emigrating. And they managed, now I'll forget the time, but I'm going to say it was October, November, year before last. And they landed, I think it was about 3 days before South Africa closed, and their container with all their worldly goods came across, and they actually quarantined with us for 2 weeks while the place they were renting for a year became available, blah, 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 lots of stuff. But actually, relatively speaking, for them it was seamless. The horror stories were several of their friends were doing the same thing. There's a lot of immigration out of South Africa going on at the moment. Were actually in the airport, they changed the rules, and their house was already in a container. They had nowhere to go, no money, no stuff, and they were locked in South Africa, and they couldn't get out, and they had nowhere to live. And it was like an absolute horror story. And I think some of these, we actually overall in the UK have been pretty lucky. But in some places, it's been an absolute nightmare.
Well, I was reading a story yesterday about New Zealand turning away New Zealanders at passport control and saying, no, you can't come back in the country. And they go, but I live here. I've got a New Zealand passport. And no, you can't come in. Bugger off somewhere else.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, where shall I go? I don't care.
And the New Zealand Prime Minister is so well respected.
Yeah.
Or had been.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about something positive now.
Absolutely.
So what are the big holiday destinations for 2022? This is the exciting bit. Where should we be going in 2022 for our holidays?
Everywhere and anywhere. There's not the UK, as far as I'm concerned. We can send you away. Certainly. I mean, like, as I said, it's fairly good news for us at the moment. Most of the world has opened up. A lot of the testing before you go now is actually the requirements of the destination you're going to, which again, the caveat is that it could potentially change at any point. In terms of destinations, though, Caribbean actually is quite popular for us. Caribbean.
He's already going there, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, boys. Yeah.
Someone's
yeah.
already going to the Caribbean soon. The Caribbean certainly has been good for us. In years gone by, we've always sent people to the Indian Ocean because it's very good value for money, specifically Mauritius. We send a lot of, whether it's couples, weddings, honeymooners, but it's very good value for families as well. And if you get a family that comes to us and says, look, we want to go all-inclusive or somewhere in Europe, actually, for not much more, you get much more of an experience by going to somewhere like Mauritius. And they are very good at the moment.
You said that. Three best things about going to Mauritius. Because I've got no idea, I've never been.
Mauritius is great, actually. So in terms of the Indian Ocean, it's the best one. So there's it's a bigger island, so there's lots to do on the island, especially for families. So you can do some really, really cool stuff. I've done it. You can go walking with lions.
Ooh.
And it is literally like virtually full-size lions. And the only thing they give you is about a 15-inch stick, and it's almost like a toothpick, actually. So, it's kind of like, when he's finished, give him this and he'll pick it. But you can do things like quad biking safaris. The beaches are incredible. You can snorkel straight off of the beach. You've got water sports, whether it's powered or non-motorized water sports, at most of the hotels there. There's just so much going on the island. It's really cool. And actually, from top to bottom, it only takes about an hour and 20.
Excuse me just a second. Pam, I know you're listening. Mauritius, put it on the list.
it's really good.
So Indian Ocean, what we've got? Seychelles,
you've got
Mauritius.
You've got Seychelles, Mauritius, and the Maldives.
Okay, and the Maldives.
Yep.
I've been to Loe Fushi in the Maldives, which was an interesting place. Further over, Andaman Islands?
You can...
Paul's geography is really good. He got the O-level.
No. I've been there. there's an island called Langkawi. We stayed in a resort called Tangjang Rui, nice. Which was beautiful. And it was actually one that was hit by the big Christmas Day tsunami, if you remember. Not when I was there, but a couple of years after I was there. That was beautiful as well. And the Maldives, I've been there. I haven't been to Mauritius or Seychelles.
They're very different. Mauritius has just got more going on. I think if you're the kind of person that likes to go and laze around on a beach and read a book and essentially just enjoy downtime. Seychelles and Maldives certainly very good for you. And actually, what we would recommend whenever we send people there is to do an island hop in. So if you're going to be there for 10 days or 2 weeks, etc., you could do, say, two or three islands in that time. Whereas Mauritius, you'd go predominantly to sort of one place. But there's so much on the island you could go and do. Most of the world is opened up, really. I mean, we do everything. We do city breaks. Obviously, UK has certainly been more popular recently, but even the continent, even Europe now is.
What is proving popular in terms of, I'm thinking of more exotic places, and by exotic, I don't necessarily just mean tropical paradises. I mean, are you getting a huge queue of people going to Turkmenistan or...
not at the moment.
A lot of people want to go to Ukraine.
Not at the moment. We can do those, the slightly more obscure ones.
Is there anywhere where you're thinking, oh, blimey, there's quite a few people looking to go there, that's a bit odd?
So lately, I tell you where was popular actually pre-COVID, and actually people still desperate to get to, is Japan.
Japan,
Japan.
That's on my list.
And I think that was partly because of the World Cup, the Rugby World Cup a couple of years ago.
All right.
My youngest son was in Japan for the World Cup.
Was he?
Yeah, and they had everything because they had an earthquake while he was there.
Okay.
And a tsunami.
And a tidal wave. Yeah,
yeah, and a tidal wave. Yeah. Boat, and he sent pictures from his hotel room, and luckily he was like 90 stories up, and they were locked in the hotel room for a few days. And then he sent me a picture. He said, I'm going to, I can't remember which match it was, I'm going to a match today, and this is a picture of the entrance. And the entrance to the ground, which was a big tunnel, had water up to within 9 inches of the roof.
Oh, my.
He said, I'm not sure if they're expecting us to swim into the stadium or not, but apparently the game is still on.
Oh, my. Wow. Wow, that would have been quite something, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, I wish I'd have gone out there for the World Cup. Yeah. I know some people. I've got friends that went out there for the World Cup, and it was, they said it was incredible.
Despite all the weather hassles, Stu had a really lovely time. He said it was fantastic, and he really enjoyed it. Yeah.
No, it's really interesting, because I'm quite interested in going to Japan. Sort of, I read Shogun when I was at school, and it stayed with me. I just want to go and see all those samurai.
You want to be a samurai, don't you?
I want to go and be a samurai. Yeah. Exactly that. And some of the Japanese, traditional Japanese gardens that interest me, and I'm not really much of a horticulturalist, so I really wanted to go. Mrs. Webster's not very keen.
Oh, okay.
Well, if you do go, you can actually pay for it, like experiences, excursions where you go and essentially be a samurai and play with a samurai sword.
Oh, you've done it now. Sorry, Pam.
Hang on, isn't playing with samurai swords a line from Kill Bill?
Shouldn't play with samurai swords. Oh, sorry, Pam. I'm afraid you're off to Japan. Get your geisha kit out.
Oh. I didn't say that.
Fantastic.
I'm in serious trouble when I get home. Thank you.
Closer to home, ski season at the moment?
Yeah, ski season's an interesting one. As you've sort of, you just touched on the whole the Austria situation, and actually which brings me on to an important point I think that people need to know about. But essentially the ski season has been a bit of a turbulent one again. I think, you know, there's lots of resorts that have either just shut down or just decided that actually it's not happening. There's quite a few clients that we've got that are still trying to book off a last minute ski trip.
Right.
But there, I mean, Austria was, as I said, Austria was one of these. Is an interesting one. So we generally would go to, as a first point of call, we would go to the FCO Gov's website and go to Travel Advice, and you sort of look at the entry requirements. Yeah. And we had, I had a client actually due to travel in March, but this is going back to sort of pre-Christmas, and they were due to travel with a teenage son who's only had one vaccination, and at the time that was the only one that the teenager was going to get. They weren't offering a second. And so they said, oh, well, what's the deal? Can he still come? So I went and checked on the FCO's website, and it said, yep, if between 12 and 17, if they're travelling with parents that are double vaxxed, they don't need to do the isolation. They can travel because of the onward travel. All looked fine as far as the government's website was concerned. I called the supplier that we'd booked it through, and actually the ski resorts themselves were not permitting anybody that hadn't been double jabbed on any ski lifts, gondolas, into restaurants or anything. So it's no good. It's all very well them travelling out there with this teenager.
Couldn't do anything.
He couldn't do anything when he got there. And actually, and also I think it might have been Switzerland at the time, and a few other countries, they imposed sort of the daily testing, and this daily testing was sort of like 30, 40 euros a pop for anybody that wasn't double vaccinated. Every single day you had to schlep down into the town to
do an
antigen or a PCR test. But you're looking at, you know, £200-300 on top of your holiday cost just in tests when you're out there.
I was talking to my daughter who's trying to book a holiday at the moment over the weekend, and she's got an 11-year-old who will be 12 sometime when they plan to be away. And actually, because we're not vaccinating kids of that age in the UK, a European holiday in Spain, I think it was in particular, was a real problem, because if she wasn't double vaxxed, they couldn't get her in or get her out, or it was going to be loads of testing. I can't remember the exact detail. But if you've got kids on that sort of a primary school age in particular, some of these requirements can be very onerous. It's a definite case of read the small print, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that Mark makes the most salient point out of all of this. No matter what the rules are, when you actually get somewhere, it all depends what the various service providers
are
prepared to do. You know, one of the interesting things, it completely 360 degrees the other way, one of the big things that's happening in France now, a lot of the restaurants and bars have suddenly put up signs saying this is a private members-only club.
So it gets around the rules.
Yeah, so they don't have to ask you for your vaccination status because it's a private members club.
So you pay a euro, join the club.
You pay 1 euro to join the club for a year and go in and have your meal. Yeah.
I'll tell you what is interesting, actually, as well, which I think is just bizarre, is how differently different countries are dealing with travel in general.
Mm.
You know, again, through our sort of our travel, our trade industry press, there's kind of talks that places like Mexico have been considering just scrapping restrictions altogether. Yeah, you know, no tests to go out there, no tests when you're out there, no tests.
Well, we're considering the same thing here, aren't we? Yeah, yeah. I mean, it should all finish by the end of the month.
I had a long conversation with my son in France yesterday on the phone. He was very upset because they just imposed even more regulations in France. And I just said, well, here they're talking about taking them all off. And he went, well, yeah, no, that's great. I said, no, but the point is, once somebody does it, a big somebody, you know, like the UK, everybody else is going to follow suit. Otherwise, they're going to go, hold on a minute, all the tourists are going to go to the UK and they're not going to come to Spain and Portugal. So I just made a prediction. I said, once the UK remove the restrictions, Portugal will be next. Spain will be after that. Italy will start thinking about it. France will start thinking about it because they've got to. Yeah.
The dominoes will start to fall.
And the dominoes will fall because otherwise they're going to be left behind and isolated. You know, for those of us that don't have to go to France, I mean, I go to France because I've got family there. For those that don't have to go to France, they go, well, I won't go. I'll go somewhere else then.
Yeah. I've got a travel-related question, which is just sort of niggling away at the back of me. Clearly, there's a lot of suppressed demand in the UK and probably worldwide on holidays at the moment. So what's it doing to prices? Because the law of supply and demand says that if lots of people are chasing holidays, prices start to
absolutely
go up.
Yeah, no, that and you're absolutely on the button, really. So we are saying whenever we're talking to people, not only the prices, but actually the availability, we are still dealing with or have been dealing with so many cancels and rebooks over the last 18 months that where now in sort of January, February time, you could look to book for summer and you'd essentially have wide open availability. It's already limited because people have booked from as early as last year, moved their holiday to this year. So you're already dealing with what's left. And what is left is...
It's commanding a premium price.
Prices have gone up, certainly. So for us at the moment, in terms of our busy period, January, February, March have always notoriously been our busier time. And generally, that's predominantly because people get Christmas out of the way and New Year out of the way, and then they want something to look forward to. Mm. So January, February, they're looking at holidays. And you see that's a trend because all of the airlines have got deals on at the moment. So BA, Virgin, all the low-cost carriers, EasyJet, they've all got sales on. Mm. Likewise, tour operators have and various hotels. So really, as much as, yes, prices are going up, the best time, and this has been the case for pre-COVID, but actually you get a better deal now booking early than you do ever by waiting until sort of doing a
lastminute.com is no longer a good idea.
Not really, no. And especially as well, the other things to consider, and you know, I don't want to sort of go on too much about COVID, but again, with a last minute booking at the moment as it stands, and again, this can change, but you have to consider the fact that you need to be booking your PCR tests for you to travel out, and it has to be within the 48 hours or the 72 hours. So actually you need to allow enough time for you to make sure that there's a booking availability at a drive-through testing centre or a walk-in testing centre as well, or a postal testing centre.
We had a really weird one. We were on a Greek island in the middle of last year, and we actually had to do a test via video link to a nurse. So we stick the thing up the nose and chunk it in the thing and then wiggle it around and then dip it in the bit and then hold it up to the screen. Turned out the nurse was in South Africa. Yeah. And it had been, so the UK government had, what's the word, subcontracted testing of foreign tourists or UK tourists returning to a South African company that was vetting to make sure that we'd done the job.
And
I actually had somebody watch me sticking something up my nose. You know, it was really weird.
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? Is that, you know, if you don't do that, you know, somebody that knows they're negative does all the tests for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a big thing, again, in France a while back of somebody got lifted for having false vaccination papers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were producing fraudulent.
Well, that's happened in the UK as well, I think. There's a lot of it about.
And there are dodgy doctors that will say they've vaccinated you when they haven't and all that kind of stuff.
I've not come across that one.
Yeah. I'll give you some names and addresses later.
I've been vaccinated and I've got the certificate to prove it, so I don't need a dodgy one.
Yeah, but I sold you the certificate. I didn't really.
No.
Mark, fascinating talking to you. Do stay with us for the rest of the show. We're going to join the Channel Radio newsroom shortly. Just before we go, though, Give us a shout out for the website for your company, contact detail, whatever you want to give us, so that people can find you, find Off-Broadway Travel, and find out more about what you do.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So the website is offbroadwaytravel.com. Feel free to go on there. All the contact details are on there. But you can call me in the new Tenterden office. Hmm. And the number is 01580-239-240, and I'll be happy to help.
Fantastic.
But don't do it now, because he's on the radio.
Yeah, you've got a Facebook page as well for the Tenterden
office. Yeah, we've got a Facebook, so it's Off-Broadway Travel Tenterden Facebook page, and we also have Instagram as well, but I'm in the process of setting up a Twitter one. So
okay. Fantastic.
I'll let you know.
Mark, thank you so much for that. Fascinating talking to you. Do stay with us for the rest of the show. For the moment, though, we're going to join the Channel Radio newsroom. Then when we come back, we're going to talk to Mr. Webster about something sensible.
Oh, well, that'd be lucky.
Yeah. He's already got me once.
Well, have I? What did I get you with? I forgot now.
The
tax returns.
Tax return.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. I cheated. I looked it up on the internet. So I had to be right.
Yeah. Why not? Anyway, let's join the newsroom and we'll be back shortly.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
You're listening to Channel Radio.